This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Look at me. I'm as helpless as a kitten up a tree. Feel like I'm clinging to a cloud. I can't understand. I get misty just holding your hand. Walk my way and a thousand violins begin to play. Or it might be the sound of your hello, that music I hear. I get misty the moment you're near. Can't you see that you're leading me on? And it's just what I want you to do. Don't you notice how hopelessly I'm lost? That's why I'm following you on my own. When I wander through this wonderland alone, never knowing my right foot from my left, my hat from my glove, I'm too misty and too much in love. Too misty and too much in love.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Thanks for joining us. I think we have some good information coming today we want to share with you. I have Mr. Ray Emery, and those of you that subscribe to the Honolulu Advertiser or saw KGMB over the Friday night, you may have seen him there. And we're going to be talking about many things, unknown soldiers and Mr. Emery's efforts, and I should say grand efforts and accomplishments in aiding and identifying the unknown soldiers. And but before that, I want to go to a little brief public service announcement out there in Mililani, something going on that all of us senior citizens now, I used to be able to say the senior citizen, but now I'm a member of that community. So,
yes.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, fine.
And who do I have on the phone here?
Oh, my name is Kathy Lohman. I'm Associate Healthy Lifestyles Director at the YMCA Central Branch, and we're not in Mililani. We're right across from the Ala Moana Hotel on Atkinson.
Okay, and so what's going on? We talked briefly. You have some kind of fair or something?
Yes. This Wednesday, thousands of seniors across America are promoting a healthy lifestyle among older adults in the National Senior Health and Fitness Day, and Central YMCA is having their fifth year of celebrating this National Senior Health and Fitness Day with a senior fair that is a free event to seniors in our community. And this fair is this Wednesday, May 28th, from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. And again, this is a free event, and the event will feature exercise classes, free health screenings, and over 20 healthy aging resource professionals. They can visit with the health professionals from Kaiser Permanente, HMSA, Waikiki Health, Ohana Healthcare, Silver and Fit, the Parkinson's and Kidney Foundations, Alzheimer's Association, and many more. Mm-hmm. They can also pick up information provided by the Diabetes Association and Arthritis Foundation. So there's lots of things going on. We have free massages. Down to Earth will be given smoothies for nutrition, all kinds of things.
And again, the date and time and location?
The date is May 28th. That's this Wednesday from 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock a.m. And it's at the Central YMCA branch across from Alamoana Hotel. That's on Atkinson, 401 Atkinson Drive. And we have free parking, 2.5 hour validated parking, just at the driveway right up behind the Y at the Yacht Harbor Tower parking garage.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yes, and I just wanted to kind of mention we are having three classes during the event, Silver and Fit, which is light resistance band, Zumba Gold, which is that new craze, but this one's especially for seniors, and real important, Tai Chi, moving for better balance, which prevents falls and is endorsed by the Centers for Disease Control.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and can you send me that email, that info, and then we'll post it.
Yes, and
at the website.
They can also get more information by calling 951-1331, that's 1331, or ymcahonolulu.org.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for letting us come on the show.
Okay, all righty.
Bye-bye.
And those of you that if you didn't get all of that, 951-1331, if you're old like me now, you can at least remember the number. 951-1331, and get greater details there, but we'll run it again in the next hour. So anyway, without any further delay and whatever, I'm excited, as you know, to this morning's paper, the Advertiser. The headlines is basically The Forgotten Cemetery. And while it's named that, there's a gentleman named Ray Emery who's never forgot it. In fact, has been just unbelievably working steadfast on this to just simply keep it in, do what's right. There are so many people that were disinterred there, taken up and taken to Punch Bowl and what have you. And along the way, some were listed as an unknown and what have you. And you're going to be fascinated or impressed with Mr. Emery as well as I'll go out on a limb and say that. I believe you will be. This is a man who has actually done things that make me feel like I'm a little June bug compared to his efforts, and sorting through documents and coming up with information that really, imagine your loved one being interned in a place with no name, no location, no nothing, and someone comes along, take it upon themselves to actually find that information. And we're going to share those stories, and we're going to talk about Pearl Harbor, but we're going to talk about the Westlock disaster that occurred May 21st, 1944. And some very interesting topics. So without delaying any further, Ray, thank you, and good morning. Welcome aboard.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all.
Well, I was a kid from joining the Navy in 1940 from Peoria, Illinois, and I ended up aboard the Savannah at first in 1940. And then in 41, I ended up on the USS Honolulu, and excuse me, and happened to be aboard the Honolulu on December 7th in Pearl Harbor.
Right. Yeah, I wanted to, as a little teaser, I didn't want to tell them just up front to have a survivor of Pearl Harbor who was right there. I just thought I'd let you tell them. But, folks, we're fortunate to even have, I mean, in 93 years old and look better than me. In fact, we're driving along the way here and everybody's going, "Hi, Ray," and look at me as if I was just a chauffeur. So he's a good-looking guy at 93, I'm telling you, folks, and just a bundle of information, unbelievable. And you should see his files he shared with us. And so I offer that to say to you that he's not all talk and hot water or piss and vinegar. This man has walked the walk, talked the talk, and he can show you the documents. So someone that I want to grow up and be like. But anyway, tell us about this Westlock incident. It was something that some say we held in secrecy, and I understand there was a benefit to being quiet a bit. But we just celebrated the 70th anniversary of the Westlock disaster, involving the loss of at least 132 African Americans. And this is something has not been widely known or publicly disseminated. But thanks to Ray, who has gone and looked at all the records that were available pretty much, and then some, and have come up and able to present with us in the public the number of African Americans that served here, and they were stationed at Schofield. So I'll let you tell the story, if you would.
Well, it was an incident that happened in 1944, May. They were getting ready to invade Saipan. Mm-hmm. And prior to leaving, for some reason or other, they were changing the ammunition on some LSDs, which was known over in the Westlock. The report that I've been able to kind of put together in the pieces is that on one of the LSDs, they had Army had a truck backed up onto the ramp, and they were taking the ammunition off the LSD and putting it into this truck. Mm-hmm. And about, they had knocked off for lunch, and shortly after lunch, for some reason, somebody or something, mishandling of ammunition, mm-hmm. it blew and it did a lot of damage. Mm-hmm. Like you said, there was 132 casualties. Really, it was not kept a secret. A lot of people, the whole city of Honolulu knew it because there was an article in the paper about what happened. The whole Pacific Fleet was in Pearl Harbor at that time, over 500 vessels, mm-hmm. which the harbor had. So it was not really a secret. It may have not been published a lot, mm-hmm. but actually, until after World War II, people started getting into it. As a matter of fact, I don't know whether I mentioned to you the other day, I think it was the 1980s, mm-hmm. the LSD that is still on the beach out there, they found the body in it. And nobody knows where this body came from, but I ran across this as a report out of Old Silhi that the body was given over to the government, mm-hmm. to identify it. And I don't think they ever did identify the person.
Probably either homeless or someone, accidental death, unattended death, recent times.
Could have been.
But this incident involved the 29th Central Chemical Decontamination Unit assigned at Schofield Barracks. And as you say, they were deployed or signed temporarily at Westlock.
Handling ammunition. Mm-hmm. They were involved with the ammunition
right.
transfer.
And the Navy, thanks to you and the African-American Diversity Culture Center, the Navy has joined forces in actually aiding that organization, and I think yourself, in getting documents and being able to go there. And I went out and on one of the tours just last Wednesday, I think, to witness that. And we've posted a number of pictures at Facebook at carolcox.com, the Carol Cox Show. So, but back to this, you put together a summary of Pearl Harbor Westlock, and you say in here, it's fascinating, the Army had 60 dead, recovered and ID'd 14. Missing is 46. The Marine Corps had 38 dead, recovered 16, 22 missing. The Navy had 33 dead, 19 recovered and ID'd, 14 missing. Coast Guard. And I spoke with a friend yesterday who was at the Coast Guard. He never knew anything about this, that a Coast Guard person died. And one document referred to Coast Guard men that passed, but you have documented at least one. For a total of 132, unbelievably, 50 of them are identified. So when we say recovered and ID'd, what does that mean?
The bodies were actually recovered and identified. Now, some of these were identified right that day. Mm-hmm. Others were identified after the war when they dug up, like, Calava Cemetery mm-hmm. or up at Schofield Barracks. Mm-hmm. People were identified at that time.
Mm-hmm. And so if they were recovered and some are missing, what would be the explanation, possible explanation, that some are missing and will never be recovered?
Well, I think it's an explosion there. The people that were military people were right there at that impact.
Mm-hmm.
They're almost vaporized. They're long gone. Mm-hmm. Just like on the Arizona, when the forward part of that ship blew, most of those people were just vaporized.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so this unit, they had, as a result of these numbers, and they were originally interned, as you just mentioned, in Halava Cemetery.
And some up at Schofield. I think there was about 10 or 12 up at Schofield Barracks.
And were the ones in Schofield disinterned and removed
yes,
and taken
yes.
to
Schofield? They were also about 1947 or 48 dug mm-hmm. up. And
yeah, I personally, I want to assign a title of a forensics expert to Ray, because it takes forensics to look at these documents and conclude, to go out and find them, first of all. I wouldn't even know where to begin in some of these documents, honestly, with you. And I do a lot of researching, so my hat's off to you.
Carol, if you notice, there was a burial number, Galava,
right?
And an X number, okay? So if you go to Punch Bowl and you go to the office up there and go to, like, one of these Punch Bowl mm-hmm. or Westlock casualties, it's got an X number on it, but the body number. So you're able to look at that document, and that document will tell you where it's buried in the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like climbing a set of stairways or a ladder. You just go from one to the other, and it leads you right to the spot where it is. The records are clear.
Right. And I know that a number of these are listed there at Punch Bowl, for example,
yeah.
still saying unknown.
Yes.
And there are multiple individuals in each, or not each, but in several of the graves.
Yeah, there's two. I think if you might have the report there, there's something like 39 grave sites and 40-some bodies.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, why then, and this brings me to, and it may not go well, set well with some hearing this, why do we have that when at our disposals, clearly you're able to track and do the records and match the X number opposed to the Halava? Why are there still so many that can be identified? Why have they not been identified?
You'll have to ask Secretary of Defense that question, Carol. I brought with me a letter that was written by something like 13 senators to the Secretary of Defense requesting that the Oklahoma casualty be buried, dug up some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, instead of taking responsibility and say, go dig them up, he's referred it down to somebody else to study. So anyway, they will be studying that, I guess, for I don't know how long.
Yeah. Now,
pardon me, let me backtrack 1 second. Getting involved this to begin with,
mm-hmm.
the very first casualty that I tried to get identified, I went to Old Silhide before it came JPAC, and I asked him what it took to get the wheels a-turning to mm-hmm. get somebody going. So they told me what it took. So I rushed home and put all that together, and plus more, went back out to Silhide. Anyway, I had a certain gentleman out there, and I said, okay, is this what it takes? He said, yeah. You know how long it took to dig him up? 5 years.
Wow.
And the only reason they dug him up to check is because they were digging up the Okinawa casualties, and the way they processed the bodies, chemically, they were having a problem. So they said, well, we better dig up a World War II, see if we'd have the same problem. And that was the only reason they dug him up to start with.
To compare.
A kid named Hembry, Thomas Hembry, off the USS Curtis.
Can you share that story just with the listeners, how you became aware of Hembry, and then in turn, finally, and before I go any further, what through his documents and reading many of his documents, arranged documents that he has, there's an unsung hero here that she's noted for getting the ladies' sports and universities and the Patsy Mink Park. But in reading the documents that you have, Patsy Mink contributed quite a bit to this and gave you great support, it appears. Is that correct?
She was great support. If it hadn't been for her, there'd be over 300 grave markers up at Punchbowl with just kind of unknown marked on it.
And we don't know that, but that was the first glaring example of how some people are not credited. She didn't look for credit, but I had no knowledge that she was involved to such a degree. So there was something you described that she attached a rider to a certain bill because she... Can you share that a little bit with us?
She wrote a letter to a colonel in the Army who had previously written me a letter to forget it, that we weren't going to do anything. And he didn't answer the letter. So she wrote him another letter. Just indicating to him that she had written a letter to him and didn't respond. Well, I didn't respond to that letter. So ends up, she bypassed him and went to the House on Finance and ended up getting a rider on the appropriations bill to force the Army and the Department of Veterans Affairs to get the correct information onto the grave markers.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And she was instrumental in a lot of this stuff, and we don't know that as a congresswoman, but she was definitely on the money, on the spot. And I read some of the letters. She had exchanges with these people. If they were dragging their feet, she would really write them back and just tell them in a very short and succinct way, get your act together.
Well, that was one thing about Patsy. If you got the truth to her, what she was trying to accomplish, mm-hmm. she was like a tiger to help
yeah.
you.
And so, as a result, this, you know, we some people say, well, the 442nd gets all the attention. But the reality is, it was through your efforts and through Ms. Mink's support of you in writing, bolstered this whole effort and gave it a shot in the arm that these African-Americans, that the African-American community will benefit from this, not secret, but this delay in giving acknowledgement.
Yeah, well, like some of the Westlock casualties that mm-hmm. were buried up Punchbowl, all it says was too unknown or whatever the case. Mm-hmm. No date on the grave marker, or not even where they got killed. And you know, Punchbowl is almost like Arlington. There's a lot of information up there. Like I showed you the other day, like the guy was something like the 13th Marine Division.
Right.
Says on the grave marker. Well, it was only six. And there's all kinds of information that could be on grave markers in Punchbowl that isn't there.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say that's always playing in your head that you would like to say to the administrators of the Punchbowl and other places? What could they do just in a simple act to get this thing going better and faster and more efficient?
Well, I think if it was them laying there, they would at least like to have on their grave marker the correct date. If they were aboard a ship, the name of the ship they were on, and the battle they fought, mm-hmm. and the date and something like that. Mm-hmm. Going back originally, I found out that prior to World War II and up into the early part of World War II, on an application for a grave marker, there was a block up there that said vessel. Shortly into World War II, the American Graves Registration Service came along, took vessel out, and that's one of the reasons that the vessel never got on a grave marker that I can know of.
Wow. So at Punchbowl, I notice you have books of photographs and documents. So it's easy to just go through, you photographed them. The same thing can be done by the management of the cemetery or the memorial and start to identify these. Have they ever invited you to be formally part of that activity, or do they shun you?
I went to Punch Bowl years ago, and I said, I'd like to get some volunteers to come up and computerize the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, I'd tell them where they got killed and what ship they were on and who the next of kin was. Well, somebody told me that you can't tell the public that, who the next of kin was. I says, horse, you know what? I says, give me 15 minutes to get home, and any Navy, Coast Guard, or Marine Corps casualty that you got buried up here from World War II, I'll tell you who the next of kin is. It was all published in 1945, so what's secret about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in that same vein, there the naysayers say, well, you, Ray, went out and took it upon yourself to say that you were able to identify the African Americans or in those days, the Negro soldiers that were killed in the...
That list you got in your head.
This list here, and some will say you just made it up, but what is this list, if you would? It shows the race and ethnicity or whatever, the title and all.
Well, this is from the Court of Inquiry report, Army Unit, the 29th Chemical Decontamination Company, Negro, was on board unloading mortar rounds at the time of the explosion. No roster of this unit's casualties was included in the Navy report. In an attempt to obtain the names of the dead and missing, the 29th Chemical Decontamination Company morning reports were requested from the National Personal Records Center, St. Louis. The following list was extracted.
So you actually have the list, and this is what you drew from, their own records.
That's right.
And they could have done this as well, but they don't. They, being whomever they, especially Punch Bowl, don't seem to be motivated. And how about JPAC? Should they have a role? And if they have a role, are they doing what they could do best? Or what would you?
First, you got to get the public interested. That's the main thing.
Mm-hmm. And then. How about the, for example, in an attempt to obtain the names of the dead and missing, the 29th Chemical Decontamination Company's morning reports were requested from the National Personnel Records Center, St. Louis. The following list was extracted. This is what you obtained.
Yes.
Did you share this with the people that manage the Punch Bowl? Or
no, because they're not basically what. How would they apply it? They wouldn't know what to do with that list.
Even though they have records and have same access that you have.
Well, you'd have to go back to original Barry and start through the whole process.
Mm-hmm. So
they more or less got the center picture.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the beginning picture and basically the end picture. And you got to put all these pictures together.
Put all the puzzle together.
Yeah, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. The records are there, but some are here, some are there, some are there.
Mm-hmm. And this list, this total list is showing 35. And simply, no casualty listing for the U.S. Marine Corps, either by name or unit, have been located. Mr. Crawford, USMC historian, has been contacted and a request made for available. So not everyone has been lethargic in their behavior and helping you. Some have been actually involved in helping in the various offices, correct?
Yes.
So, one thing that you mentioned, shared with me, now this 70th anniversary memorial that took place, ceremony took place on Wednesday. At Punch Bowl, that came on the day afterwards. Where was the director? We saw four-star general Vincent.
I didn't see the director of the cemetery there.
In your opinion, do you believe that he should have been there, or was this rise to the occasion?
I can't criticize for why he wasn't there. Maybe he had other engagements, or something else was going on. It was more important than what was going on there that day. Mm-hmm. I can't criticize it for not being there. I just think about he wasn't there. That's it.
Yeah, well, I would like to say that I didn't hear them read a letter to say that he's apologizing for not being able to be there. It's such a major event and various things coming to light and sharing. So I'm not criticizing him, but I would say that a simple letter or an underling coming in and serving and saying he gives
us... Carol, let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
Did you publicize this on the radio before that day?
Well, I didn't have it. Didn't have that information.
See, there was the thing of getting it out to the public.
Yeah, but, I mean, this is Punch Bowl. When they said, can we use your facility to commemorate this, then that's when the ball got... For me, once I heard it, I thought, wow, here's an opportunity. And then I heard this gentleman, he calls himself Ray Emery, standing there and spouting the truth. And I thought, I got to go up and approach this man and ask him to come on the show and share the truth.
That's why I'm here today, to help you get the word out about the Westlaw.
My God. I'm going to try to get an excerpt from your presentation was there. Folks, if you've ever seen anybody speak with fire in their belly, this gentleman, he is committed to the soldiers. To, you know, we're talking all the side issues, but his focus is on helping identify the soldiers that have served and gave their life for this country. And all they are identified as, there you see the number 2, unknown, the date, Westlock disaster, if that. I think we owe them more than that, especially, not just on Memorial Day, but we owe them, as you've described, laid it out. We should give them better. So, anyway, that with this Westlock, let's describe that there's the LSTs. And I posted up the speech that was given by Commander Tim Wilkie, commanding officer, A-Float training group, MIDPAC. And I was pretty moved with that speech. And there was another gentleman, Doug Wachter, whose father served on one of the LSTs. And there was also a living survivor, a pharmacist, Mr. Jack Sampson, who resides in Nehalem, Oregon now, and he was here. So have you had any contact with any of the other survivors, any other survivors of the Westlock?
Not that I recall. I've met them in past years when they had their tours out to the Westlock, but I don't recall their names.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the speech talked about the LST of role T8 consisted of LSTs 205, 225, 274, 43, 179, 353, and that's the one the African Americans were assigned to loading, LST 353, and then 39 with pharmacist Mate Sampson's LST 222 being berthed in the next row over T9. The explosions were so...
Excuse me, have you ever seen a layout of the Westlock where the LSTs were?
Yeah, I've seen a picture of them and then the burning, and they are nestled up together. But I was reading this, and I thought the explosions, the buildings blew up. And they weren't even directly hit, just from the shock wave. So
on the beach, were they?
On the beach, yeah. And we're fortunate that we didn't have a greater explosion, considering where we were. And so the quick thinking, or just luck, both maybe? I just couldn't. And I'm reading where some of the guys were knocked down on their feet. Knocked off their feet and face down because of the shock wave was so great. So to survive that, how many did survive?
I have no idea.
Yeah. So anyway, there's one of the LSTs you can see remnants of it still. That's LST 480, And if you'd like to see pictures of that, you can go to Carol Cox of the Carol Cox Show, and you can see the rusted out hull or the bow of that sticking up on land and what have you. But I do have to say, the Navy, the United States Navy, its outreach, and it's what it's, I don't know what they did in the past, but the other day that I was out there, I don't think we can ask for any much more than what they've done, because they were there. They provided a boat, took anyone that wanted to go. And by the way, now, next year I'm informed that there's going to be another gathering. And so please, hopefully we get some public relations or get the word out and to show some appreciation to these soldiers and to this incident. So keep your eyes open, and we will announce it if we learn of it in time, that they're having a ceremony or what have you again next year.
Carl, excuse me. Mm-hmm. There are efforts to raise money to put the names on a wall or a plaque up at the punch bowl. So anyway, I think anybody who's interested in donating a dollar or so, every dollar helps.
Mm-hmm.
But they would be interested in that support. And where they send that money to, I don't know, but you probably do.
I don't, and that's why I ask Ms. Dolores Gutman to call in, and for that very purpose, to inform the public of this need and this desire to have a plaque, because you have put the names together. You've done
the got the names ready to go.
They're ready to go and ready to be chipped in stone. But and the approximate, do you know right off the head how much the estimate of it would cost to get that plaque?
I don't
up?
Know, but I understand she's about $10,000 short.
Mm-hmm. So, Dolores Gutman, if you're there, as we had asked you to call in, we'd like to know, you could share with us what the cost is and what the plan is. But those of you that are soldiers out there, veterans, and in the African-American community, whatever community you're in, and would love to give that donation, we'll find out later and inform you. Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question?
Yes, good morning, Carol. This is Dolores Gutman from the African American Diversity Culture Center Hawaii.
Well, good
How
morning.
How are you today?
I'm fine. We were just talking about you.
Yes, I heard. And I'm glad to be connected with you and Ray there in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And Ray, you're doing a good job out there. Keep your work up.
Well,
I tell you, without Ray, none of the stuff that you see happening today would be open to the public.
Mm-hmm. Just how, if you could, and I want to blow his horn, because I tell you, I know the significance of this information, and I know the difficulty of obtaining it, and I know the cost. How would you describe this? Is this a task, this monumental task? What would be one good word you could come up with from the African-American community diversity?
Well, I think the good word for us is for the JPAC to exhume those bodies in the 39 graves and identify those men, 18 and 19 and 20-year-old, who died 70 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And their family never knew what happened to them. They need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever is left now, I know their parents, husband, brothers, and sons, you know, many of them are dead, but
mm-hmm.
they have relatives, and they can come and take these bodies home and bring peace to these men,
mm-hmm.
to their spirit, and that kind of thing. So this is what we're advocating, and we want our congressional leaders to get behind this in D.C. to make this happen, just like Ray was able to do so with Patsy Meek to get the identification names corrected at the graves at the National Memorial Cemetery.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and this is what we have to do.
Is Ray our hero?
Ray is our hero, because without Ray, I would not know that the bodies of African Americans who died 70 years ago are buried in the National Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And that did not come to my attention in 2009, and Ray was the person that brought it to my attention and gave me the grave numbers and the site.
I remember you sharing that with me, and I had heard rumors about it but didn't know anything about it. And then Marsha Jonas shared a tidbit about it that was African-Americans had died over there. Because most of the history just, it didn't shut us out. It just, I don't know why.
The history was overstepped by the historians. And, of course, the military officials, this was not a great incident to occur during World War II. We just had the bombing of Pearl Harbor December 7, 1941, and then 2 years later, we have the second disaster in Pearl Harbor, and that's right in the midst of our Pacific Theater War.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this is kept under wrap. Hawaii was under martial law at that time. No one in this state could send anything out of here, breathing anything about what happened at Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And these people have been virtually forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And until 2009, the historians brought it to my attention. Marsha and Donna might have heard about it, but nobody told me anything about it. And I'm a historian, and the keepers of our history, about people of African descent. 200 years here just in the Hawaiian Islands, which includes World War II in the Pacific. And those stories are still unfolding, by the way, in case people out there, you haven't read anything about these different stories about the heroism of our men who did work in the Pacific Theater.
Mm-hmm.
There are numerous ones. Those stories are not revealed yet. Okay? And we need scholars. We need research people to step forth and help us to investigate these stories and get the data right and look in the archives like Ray has done. He's traveled all the way to D.C. to check the records and things like that. His work is deep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the work he's done, it will take hours and weeks and months to understand and connect the dots as
That's
he's
right.
done. And you can appreciate that. But
well, I'm under Ray's tutelage. He has shown me how to look at the records and what to look for and all the innuendos that we need to follow, mm-hmm. including the letter sent to the commander in Washington, D.C., the POWMIA, mm-hmm. Who are seeking to find victims and their bodies wherever they are in the Pacific Theater and the European Theater.
Yeah, and just so the listeners just joining in, I have Ray Emery, Mr. Ray Emery, who has put together substantial information and documentation on identifying unknown soldiers, period. We're just fortunate that in some of his efforts, he identified the African-American contribution.
Yes, at Westlock, yes, without Ray.
At Westlock. And I also want to make sure, give emphasis on the fact that we're talking about approximately 3 years later than the Pearl Harbor attack, so I don't want to go away misinforming or giving the impression
May 21st, 1944 is the exact date.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Sunday.
Right. Around.
I know in my records, 104 men came down from Schofield Barracks to help to unload and reload LST-353.
Mm-hmm.
That is the landship tank that blew up.
So let me ask you this now: this fundraiser or this need for money to put in a plaque, where will the plaque be? And
the plaque that we are looking to do in collaborating with Ray's research and another researcher in LaGrande, Washington, is going to be on the walkway at the National Memorial Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And we need funds. We need a lot of support, as a matter of fact. That's just one piece of the program. We still have to find the families of these men. And I have a student intern from the University of Hawaii working with me on that. We have tracked five of them to where they enlisted in the Army,
mm-hmm.
or in the military,
mm-hmm.
across the nation. But we need funding, and we need help. And we need our community here in Hawaii to realize that African-American history is deep in these islands. We were here way before the missionaries got here and before plantation days, and our history has been pushed to the curb. We are now trying to bring it out of those little crevices and educate the people about the contributions of people of African descent. They came from around the world, not mainland USA only, as
mm-hmm.
far away as Brazil and Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And they made Hawaii their home. And their children in the 1700s and the early 1800s look like most of our kids here in the islands today.
Mm-hmm.
They have a Hapa background.
Mm-hmm.
And they are part, they are the descendants of those pioneers. And you have to remember also, those men jumped ship here in Hawaii because this was a free territory in the world. The rest of the world was chaos with war in Europe and slavery and all the other social injustices around the world. So they were looking for peace. They were young men, and they were escaping this. And the oceans were there underground.
And many of them left the mainland from the small farms, plantations, to
if yes, from the plantation. They came from Caribbean. They came from Africa. They came from Brazil. I got the history. I got the data. It's not here to say. The data is there.
Yeah, but and many of them, for example, Dory Miller came from Texas down
from Texas.
Area.
And the first person, and we have to also remember the civilian components, which were the merchant ships.
Right.
That were out there. Those guys came from Richmond. But as a matter of fact, the leader of the first, the King Kamehameha's men, and the third king, there were four men, and they were all black. This was way before the Royal Hawaiian Band.
So now, again, back to this, the monument that you're trying and the plaque. What is needed, and where would they they make donations to?
They can make donations by going to ADDP. That's our acronym for African American Diversity Culture Center Hawaii, and click on PayPal.
Okay, and is this a nonprofit?
This is a nonprofit 501(c).
And taxes.
Yeah, I make Senator Inouye was very instrumental in getting our 501(c) expedited in a couple months. And we were founded in 1997, and we got our RAS classification because of Inouye in January 1998.
Well, you would have gotten it anyway, probably.
It would have been a while. I understand that. In order, that's what he was for. He expedites stuff.
Yeah, so, okay, but where, again, would they, if they send a donation, they go to the website, ACDC?
AADCCH. That's AAApple Delta Charlie Hawaii.org.
Okay, and they can go there. And is there a phone number
they can
call?
Yeah, and phone number, they can call 808-597-1341 for more information. And they can also send donations to our headquarters, which is located in Hawaii National Bank Building at 1311 Kapi'olani Boulevard. Suite 203-207, and that's 96814.
Now, unless they play this back real fast, they won't get it. So if you would...
Slowly. 808. You can call Dolores Stupin or Pansy Yarbrough at 808-597-1341.
And this is a tax-deductible donation?
This is a tax-deductible donation, and our offices are located in the Hawaii National Bank Building. And that's at 1311 Kapi'olani Boulevard.
And what will this plaque contain? We're coming down to the...
The plaque will contain... it is recommended that we put the names of all of the people that are listed, that are mentioned on the plaque. And also, the Daughters of the Revolution is also in support, working with us to try to get us to get enough funding to put the plaque up there. And we're looking for other corporations to do the same thing. And we want our corporate community to know that African Americans have made great contributions to these beautiful islands of Hawaii. We're not just coming now. You need to know that, and you need to open your doors and your pocketbooks.
Well, that's good. And so with this plaque, and I wanted to speak to, if you would speak to the, I know in 2009 or 3 years ago, they took you out in a rubberized inflatable boat to go see the area, right?
Yes, that was Dr. Garris.
I say that laughingly because today, we were in a yacht, practically.
We were in a yacht.
So things are, the Navy is really supporting you.
Joint Base Pearl Harbor and Navy Region are supporting everything that we are doing. And without their support and their openness to us, we wouldn't be able to educate the public about this incident. And we did do several things this year. We had the landing ceremony at the State Capitol Rotunda, which was wonderful. Again, we are commemorating the lives of those people that have virtually been forgotten 70 years ago, and then, of course, our ceremony at the National Cemetery, May 21st, 2014, at the National Memorial Cemetery.
Well, I can tell you the day out on at Pearl Harbor and to see this boat that they put us all on. The
Admiral's Barge?
Admiral's Barge. The Admiral's Barge, that's right. And then I'm thinking, boy, we've come a long way. And to see the brass, you got to speak to that, Dolores. I mean, have you ever compared to punch you had?
No, this year was kind of overwhelming with the officers and the high-ranking support in our efforts, and we were very proud to see that. And we were very proud to that the officers of all ethnicities stepped forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a warm feeling of a lot of aloha in terms of the work that needs to be done in the future, and that it will be done. And we know that Navy Region Hawaii and George Bay Pearl Harbor and all its admirals and captains and the U.S. Army, we had General Vincent Brooks this year, and they're stepping up to the plate and becoming involved. And I think with the support of all the military branches here in the islands, we should be able to achieve the things that we need to do.
Yeah, and I, as an African-American, I am so happy and pleased to see that this is coming to light. But I have one little wish, and to ask of you and everybody involved, because whatever we do going forward, we have to, and acknowledge somewhere down the line on that plaque or somewhere, inscribe the name Ray Emery on something. And
yes.
I don't mean
it. I agree. Not in a
gratuitous way. And whether he wants it or not, because I know the impact and I know how difficult it is to investigate. And I think we owe him
a great honor that with Ray in terms of that research, because without it, it wouldn't have happened.
We wouldn't have known
about this history.
I ask that publicly so that we all can say, well, remember when.
Yeah, but you got to remember our friend up in Oregon, too.
Our friend, who is that now?
Our friend David Smith in Oregon and Washington.
Yeah, well.
His father was the captain of LST 353,
right.
But he was not present when the ship blew up that day.
But you understand, I just think that. For me, I'm overjoyed when I read about it, I hear about it, and then I have the chance through you and through this whole process to meet Ray Emery. Come on.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Carol Cox. You're playing a very pivotal part in this story and getting it out there. I want to personally thank you for your effort and being with us to tell the story this Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
And we appreciate all your efforts and your community work in general. And for this particular one, we want to make sure we acknowledge your contributions and what you're doing here in the island. Again, there are many people like you and before you who were doing different things. And we appreciate having you on the front line to tell the stories out there.
Okay, well, thank you. And we're going to be back in the next hour. We're coming down to the last minute. So thank you, Dolores Gutman.
You're welcome.
I feel pretty good, it's unfortunate they lost a life, but boy, they're alive now, I take it.
Yeah, we're going to take it forth, Carol, with your help and the community. We're going to take it forth, and we are going to resurrect their lives and give honor due to them, which has been missing all these years.
Okay, well, thank you. And
you're
I know that I have a caller. If you got one comment real quick, I'll entertain it. Caller, go ahead real quick. You have any comment?
Bless you. This is Homeless Denise. Mr. Emery, Ms. Goodman, Mr. Cox, bless you. Thank you for bringing out the truth. I've known JPAC members, and I know a number of Pearl Harbor survivors. You know, they would come play golf where I worked, and the stories they would tell, the things that they went through. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll be back in the next hour, and Dolores, if you're there, and feel free to call back.
But
we're going to talk Pearl Harbor, and Ray has some very awesome information and to share with us how he fired off one round and on the gun and the jams on him. So
I knew,
stay
I
tuned.
I knew a guy who survived for almost a week underwater.
Yeah. Well, we'll be back and hold that thought, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha. Bye.
This has been... Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI.
4 or 5 times. 4 or 5 times. There was a light doing things right. 4 or 5 times. Maybe I'll sigh. Maybe I'll cry. But if I die, I'm gonna try 4 or 5 times. 4 or 5 times. 4 or 5 times. Take 2 or 3 till you can see 4 or 5 times. When the day breaks and your head aches, it will wear off, and you'll swear off 4 or 5 times. Maybe you think of me when you are all alone. Maybe the one who is waiting will prove untrue, then what will you do? Maybe you sit and sigh, wishing that I were near. Then maybe you'll ask me to come back again.
If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
Hi, good morning again. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. My guest, and I'm fortunate to have him, is Mr. Ray Emery. I will call him a forensic expert. He has been aggressively and actively and successfully digging up information and gathering information to shine light on history regarding Pearl Harbor, the Westlock disaster, and just an all-around good guy, if you ask me. So we're going to be talking about his experience because Ray is 93 years young, and is a survivor of Pearl Harbor, and actually sat on the Pearl Harbor at Pearl Harbor on the Honolulu, shooting bullets in the sky. But we're going to have him to tell the story of that attack as he participated. But before that, I think we have this public service announcement that I wanted to acknowledge occurring on May 28th.
Paula, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Carol.
Yes, go ahead and tell us what you have there.
All right, my name is Kathy Loma, and I'm with the Central YMCA, the Healthy Lifestyles Director. And this Wednesday, Seniors from across the country will participate in National Senior Health and Fitness Day. This is to promote a healthy lifestyle among older adults. So in celebration, we're inviting seniors to a free event at the YMCA of Honolulu Central Branch this Wednesday, May 28th, from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. The event will feature exercise classes, free health screenings, and over 20 healthy aging resource professionals. That includes Kaiser Permanente, HMSA, Waikiki Health, Ohana Healthcare, Silver and Fit, the Parkinson's and Kidney Foundations, and Alzheimer's Association, plus many more. The event will also offer three classes, Silver and Fit, Zumba Gold, and Tai Chi Moving for a Better Balance. These classes are fun, easy to follow, and geared for non-active to moderately active seniors. So join us for National Senior Health and Fitness Day at YMCA Central Branch, that's across from the Ala Moana Hotel, Atkinson Drive. That's on Wednesday, May 28th, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Admission is free, and we validate free two-and-a-half-hour parking at Yacht Harbor Tower Parking Garage. If you want more details, please call me at the YMCA at 951-1331. That's 951-1331. Or visit ymcahonolulu.org.
All righty. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
All righty. Let us know when you have anything else there. I'm sure my listeners, I have a few young listeners, and the rest of us, we're over the hill now. So.
Yeah. Well, a lot of our classes, you know, we have them. I designed the group exercise program, and we have them for all ages. And what's good about our classes is we have mix. You know, we have from young to old that our instructors can modify, you know, the programs. And a lot of these ones that are even on the Senior Health and Fitness Day is also just for old, active older adults, not just for seniors. So
good.
Yeah. So anybody can come.
Thank you so much, and we'll be, hopefully they'll come. And again, just the phone number is 951-1331 for an event at May 28th at the Central YMCA branch on Atkinson Drive from 8 to 11 a.m. Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha.
All righty. And now back with Mr. Ray Emery. And Ray is from, born and raised in Peoria, Illinois. And at 93 years old, that was after Abraham Lincoln, right?
After.
But no, but I'm sure you probably go dig up a bunch of records on him. I've seen how you dig and scratch. Do you by chance have any formal training in forensic research such as this? Nothing,
no,
huh?
No. No. None whatsoever.
Nothing. Wow.
Everything I know, I taught myself.
Wow. I noticed that in some of the documents, some people got a little upset with you because you were right on the money and they were wrong, just dead wrong. And they didn't know how to just say, we're wrong and thank you for bringing it to our attention.
Well, I didn't give them the total, if you remember. I worked just backwards.
I like the one letter you got where he wrote, this is it. We've got enough for your calls, your letters, and don't call. And all you wanted to do is to make sure that an unknown soldier, listed as unknown, when they had the information, to make him known. And I just thought that was kind of...
Well, that's my favorite letter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But anyway, tell us about this morning, if you would. You're 20 years old, and you're inside of the ship's hull or wherever you are in your bunk or... Walk us through that experience.
Well, I'm a young punk kid aboard the USS Honolulu, sitting at the berth, what is known as berth B-21 in the Navy Yard in Pearl Harbor. The outboard of our ship that day was the USS St. Louis. And over the dock beyond the St. Louis was the San Francisco, and beyond that was the New Orleans. The St. Louis was tied up to us. And we were transferring the flag, Cruiser Division 9, from Honolulu over to the St. Louis. And the rumor was that we were to leave the following Friday, to escort the Ramapo, which was over a couple of piers under the Hammerhead Crane, loading PT boats. So here we are, sitting in the middle of Pearl Harbor in the Navy Yard on the morning December the 7th. Everything is fine. I'm sitting on the bunks were three high in the compartment we were in. My bunk was the middle one. And I was sitting on the bottom bunk reading the morning newspaper. And everything was fine up until about 5 minutes to 8 o'clock. General quarter was sounded. And I thought to myself, wait a minute now. The people that had 4 to 8 watch that morning, they hadn't had to eat and finish eating breakfast. So I hurriedly, for some reason, folded my newspaper up and stuck it underneath my bunk straps and hit the one ladder going to topside. My battle station was 50 caliber machine guns in the after superstructure port side. I hurriedly got up to my battle station and there was four of us signed to two machine guns. And I remember these names real well. Turner, Stevens, and a guy named Roy Hader. Roy was a third-class gunner's mate, and he was in charge of us other three. I was the first one there and had the cover, canvas cover, off of one of the 50-caliber machine guns, and the other one about halfway off, and a torpedo plane's out there landing their torpedoes between where we are in the sub-base. Well, when the first torpedo plane that I saw drop his torpedo, I stopped pulling the cover off the machine gun, stuck my head around the bulkhead and watched the torpedo go into the side of one of the battleships. I thought, hey, that thing wasn't supposed to explode like that, go under it or dud or something. And as I was kind of scratching my head at what was going on, as I turned back to pull the cover the rest of the way off the machine gun, the second one, I saw the other torpedo plane going by with that big red ball on there. Big red ball. That thing was as big as probably the ship, but it went anyway. But anyway, the thought came to my mind, who declared war on whom first, and where did they come here to get so fast? Well, realizing by now that something is happening, I'm beating on this ammunition box with a lock on it. The kid named Stevens got there about this time, and he said, Emery, what are you doing? I said, the Japanese are attacked. He thought the man with the little white coat should be there about this time to haul me away. But this time, here goes another torpedo plane past our fantail. And when he saw what was going on, he about come unglued. Now, Roy Turner, he was out at Nanticoole Beach Party that weekend. So Roy Hader was third man to get there. But on the way up, he was in charge of us. Something told him to turn the water circulating pump on. He didn't know the Japanese were attacking, but he never, ever did that before when we went to general quarters. So anyway, time he got there, that we had the ammunition box broken open. We had ammunition on the 250 caliber machine guns, and we started firing at anything that came close. Well, the first round that I fired, the bolt didn't come back, so I had to pull it back manually, and the shell landed on the deck. For some reason or other, I stooped over and picked it up. Well, that was the one I showed you the other day.
I
saw one plane go down, only one. That was a torpedo plane between us and the sub base, where it got lit up like a Christmas tree. The prop came off the nose and kept going through the air. Anyway, it dropped down just vertically into the water. Good, there's a good picture of that airplane taken after when they raised it out of the water.
Being hoisted out. Yeah.
So anyway, then we stayed at general quarters the rest of the day and throughout the night, but until the next day, about 10 o'clock.
So, at that time, we just got burning oil on the water. And
no, I didn't
see any of that.
I didn't see anything from the time that I overlong battleship roll till after the attack was over with. When the 3-inch fired a shell just below us, that's the last time I remember hearing anything. I didn't hear the Arizona blowing up. I didn't know what happened to battleship roll until after the attack was over with. Don't ask me what happened on the other side of the ship, Carol. Yeah. I can't see through that bulkhead like that room there. I'm interested in looking towards town, Hickam Field.
And so, earlier you mentioned civilians were impacted by this. A number of them died because of the shrapnel in the...
Shrapnel in downtown, yeah.
Downtown Little Street, you say.
Yeah, yes.
So, now, the recovery of these men, and again, back to where we started, the unknown and those that were interned. And I'm going to raise this issue. I don't know if it's an issue, but in this article today in the Honolulu Advertiser, we're not being mean-spirited, and if you'd like to participate, come along. But one of the comments made by the National Parks, I don't know his title now, Martinez, he said that the pine boxes were stained with blood, or what was his description?
I can't believe that happened.
Yeah, because they weren't burying them right away or putting them in pine boxes, were they?
The ones that have been dug up mm-hmm. have been wrapped up in a Navy blanket. The Navy blanket looks brand new.
Mm-hmm.
There's a witness right there over there.
Yeah, we saw the pictures and the blankets that they put them in. So, another one was that they don't get embalmed. They weren't being embalmed. But
Some of them were embalmed, according to the Naval records.
Yeah, your records that you have show that Borthwick did a number of the people.
They came into the picture a few days after.
Mm-hmm. And so, with this, the Honolulu, and that was the ship you were on at that time, you also served on the Phelan, right?
Correct.
And where the Phelan, what were you doing? What were some of the tours that you did on the Phelan?
Well, the Phelan was an amphibious transport that put troops ashore at Tarawa, Kwajalein, Guam, Saipan, Leyte, Luzon, and Iwo Jima.
Mm-hmm. And you were aboard that vessel.
I was aboard that
to
from
serve
1943
that.
Up until the end of the war.
And you served, what, total 6 years?
6 years and 4 days. Don't ask me the hours. I can't tell you that.
So, in that, did you experience any strafing or attacks on the Phelan in your travels there?
The Phelan didn't, but on the Honolulu we did.
Oh, you were attacked.
We took dive bombers off of Guadalcanal, and it got caught in the battle of what they call the Battle of Tassafaringa off Guadalcanal on November 30th, 1942.
Mm-hmm.
And in that battle, the Northampton was sunk. The Minneapolis and New Orleans both lost a bow, one to number one turret, one to number two turret. 10th Pensacola took a torpedo amidship, and the Honolulu was right in the middle, never got a scratch.
Yeah, but yeah, and I saw the pictures of you have of the bow just decimated on one, and they had a chain and tape.
Well, that was after I left, but that was the Battle of Coolah Gulf.
My goodness. And so the Honolulu, speaking of the Honolulu, the ship Honolulu, there's a replica or a model of the Honolulu at the City Hall.
This city, for some reason or other, doesn't even recognize the Honolulu ever happened. USS Honolulu. They got a model down the basement of the City Hall, buried down there someplace. Never shown. You do go down to the City Hall. There is the bell there and the list of the names of the kids that got killed aboard the ship.
Mm-hmm.
But you never hear anybody. School teachers, I went to sat down having lunch here about a month or so ago, and principals of schools came in there and just stroke up a conversation with, and they had never heard of the Honolulu. For some reason or other, I don't know why this city can't. You go to Boise
mm-hmm.
and out to the airport, and here they got a big display under glass out there about the USS Boise. You never hear anything about the Honolulu for some reason or other. Not just because I was aboard it,
mm-hmm.
but the kids, it's something they can grab a hold of. It's the Honolulu.
The Honolulu, it's named after the city. It's named for the city.
When the Honolulu first came, Carol, the Honolulu first made maiden voyage in 1938 out
mm-hmm.
here in Honolulu, tied up down at the Loa Tower. Prior to it getting here, the kids had saved up all their dimes where there was silver in it. They donated their dimes and had a big silver bowl made and gave it to the ship. Well, it's out in the Navy Yard. But anyway, why not put it on display and see what the kids did back in those days?
And where do you think that bowl is?
It's out in the Navy Yard.
Just
sitting there someplace.
Really?
Yeah.
And you mentioned some young men died on the Honolulu when they're from attacks or
when in the Lady Gulf is we lost two SOCs scout planes up in the Aleutians to the fog. That was the first casualties I had aboard the Honolulu, far as deaths. Mm-hmm. And then when it got out and in the Lady Gulf, they lost about 60 that day.
So when you're aboard this vessel and you leave Honolulu, when did you, any given tour, when did you go ashore? How long would it be some of these stays? 3 months, 1 month, 2 months?
When I was aboard the Honolulu?
Mm-hmm.
I was aboard the Honolulu from May of 41 and up until spring of 43.
Mm-hmm. And
then I rode the Feeland out from 43 up until the end of the war.
And you're on this vessel when you do go on a deployment like you went down to Leyte. You left from, departed from where? Departed from where?
Leyte?
Mm-hmm. And Iwo Jima.
Actually, we left Pearl heading for Yap. And we're on the way before we got to Yap, they says bypass it. So we ended up with the troops, and we took them down to Manus and laid down there for a month aboard with the troops aboard. Mm-hmm. And then we went up in the invasion of Leyte in October of 1944.
Mm-hmm. And then that's, but you never went ashore. This was all
over. I never went ashore. As close as I got to shore was in Saipan of going over and getting some LCVPs that were helping get boats off of the coral reef.
Mm-hmm.
With destroyers firing one way and the enemy firing the other way.
And you're in the middle trying to get out.
Over the top of us. But anyway.
And you're trying to extract. And I know I made the mistake of asking you, were you ever frightened? And why did I ask that? Don't ever ask a sailor, was he frightened?
When a person's got a lot of things to do, you don't worry about that. You do what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. And so you were on the Honolulu back in Pearl Harbor. You shot the 50 caliber, and I was looking at some of the dates on the stamped on the bullet, the casing, 1933.
Yeah,
it was made in 1933, but
fired in 1941.
That's
the reason that some of this faulty ammunition landed in downtown Honolulu.
And
old ammunition.
And possibly been out on the, exposed to the ocean and the salt air and all. And so for you guys that are shooters out there, you better keep firing those rounds. Don't stay up, keep them around. But it jammed. It didn't have enough compression, I guess, to kick the boat back completely. And so you had to rejam it. And I actually have a picture of that if you want, just for you history buffs, if you want to see a picture of his 50 caliber shell, it'll be posted at carolcox.com. But anyway, there are many things that have been presented, and is there anything that you'd share with us that really history has claimed one thing, claimed it one way? Is there anything that come to mind that you would like to set the record straight as you have recovered documents?
Not really.
Come on.
So, there's too many things that I get upset about. But anyway.
Well, that's why we call it the Carol Cox Show. I'm always upset. But it's fascinating to... It's Memorial Day, and while I don't... advocate war and violence, but it is what it is. It's history, and to be able to talk with you and you share with the listeners out there what went on, and that some of the ships that I read, they were the Virginia, the Arizona. You didn't see any of that, but what was the feeling days later? Was it just everybody numb, or were they upbeat and just really got to recover and go? What was the general
everything feeling? Everything was, you go, your repetition, like your go through drills and drills and drills and drills, mm-hmm. before, you know, in peacetime, and when the day occurred, the kids just did what they were trained to do. They just went about and did it automatically.
This was a Navy. They don't hang their faces in their hands anyway. They got a job to do.
Well,
this is military.
Like kids inside the turret, they can't see what's going on there. Mm-hmm. They're inside of a turret. They're bringing up ammunition, throw it in a breach, and fire it. And it's just continual. The guys down the engine room, they're keeping the boilers going. And
So it was just, it was ready, especially now it's time to go fight, to get even moment, or make them pay for what
they
had done.
Well, it's just wars, you know.
War is war,
and you do what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. And you guys, after you were in port for how long in the Honolulu? And
we got out, we went in dry dock the following Saturday, if I remember right, and we got we took a near miss. It caved in the side up on the port side forward, about 5 feet deep, about 20 feet fore and aft, and about maybe 10 feet vertically. Mm-hmm. Flooded the 5-inch magazines. But anyway, we got out of town about shortly after the first year and went back to Mare Island to get final fix.
Oh.
And then we took the first convoy to Melbourne, Australia.
So you were transporting troops aboard that?
Convoying. Yeah.
Mm. And so you've been... All of those areas in the theater, you pretty much were there. Not all of them.
Well, the Honolulu, let's talk about the Honolulu for just a second.
Okay.
The Honolulu, after it, Pearl Harbor, went back to San Francisco, said, took the first convoy to Melbourne, Australia. Then we came back up and took troops down to Samoa. And when we were in Samoa, we got word something was going to happen. So we headed for Pearl Harbor. And a lot of activity was going on in Pearl Harbor. Well, this was just prior to the Midway Battle. So during that period of time, when we got underway, we stayed with the carrier for about one day. And then we left and went north in between the Aleutians and Honolulu. And we operated out of Kodiak, bombarded Kiska the first day, or the 7th of August, 1942. And then put troops out on some of the islands to come back to San Francisco, and then we took a convoy to New Caledonia. And New Caledonia, we just got underway a couple of days later, went up to Espirito Santo, and then about 3 or 4 days later, we're up off Guadalcanal in this night battle. Anyway, so then the Honolulu was also... Took three near misses off Guadalcanal in February, I think it was, when they were bombarded Munda. We were a screening force for the force bombarded Munda. Well, shortly after that, then I left the Honolulu. But the Honolulu went through hell for the Tugal War.
Near misses and...
Near misses and getting torpedoed twice after I left it. Ship got rebuilt at the end of the war. And after it got rebuilt, then they scrapped it, but... I can't, not just because I was aboard the Honolulu. I was a little like Savannah and the feeling.
Well, we should go and ask the city.
I've been asking. I've even booked the mayor. I said, what's going on?
Answer.
No, now they'll get to it. It's like identifying bodies. Yeah, we'll get to it.
Okay. But so, I want to talk about a little bit about Dory Miller. I know it's a sensitive thing out there, but I believe in where there is information that shine light on things and explain things a little better than what we've been presented, or raises issues. I'd like to see them fleshed out, because there's nothing like having misinformation and calling it history and fact. What about Dory Miller? You've done some reading and research, and I read what I read in various reports. It's not what is reported historically. It didn't happen that way. But you have some information.
Let me go back to where I first got involved with the Dory Miller story.
Okay.
They had a lady come out to Arizona Memorial when I was a volunteer out there one day. And before the first theater opened, she came to me and she says, "Mr. Emery, I just was in the in there, and there's a story about a black gentleman." She says, "But the stories don't agree." And I acted a little dumb, and I says, "Well, show me." So we walked over there, and she, this, and this, and this, they didn't agree with what they had on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So she wanted to complain a little bit about it. So they have these forms out there that what you think about the place. So she was starting to fill out one of those, and she got about halfway done, and she turned around to me, and she says, "Mr. Emery, I would not normally tell you who I am, but I'm the daughter of Senator John Glenn." I says, "Write faster." So anyway, so she's heading for the airport shortly after she takes her tour out there. So about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the front office got a copy of what she had written that day, and they wanted to get a hold of her. I says, "Well, she's about halfway to Colorado right now, where her parents were skiing. So I said, you got a little problem." So anyway, they took his presentation off the wall. Shortly after that, there was a good-looking black gentleman that shows up at the front desk out there one morning. He says, "I've been in the museum, and why isn't Dory Miller's picture on the wall?" I says, "Why should Dory Miller's picture be on the wall?"
Mm-hmm.
He says, "Well, he did this, he did that, and did this and that." I says, where'd you learn that? He says, "I read all about it." And when he pointed that he saved the captain of that ship that was on the wall out
mm-hmm.
there, he pointed to the Arizona. I says, "Sir," I says, "he wasn't on the Arizona." "Oh, yes, sir." I says, "No, he was on the West Virginia.
Okay.
You come with me." We went in the back office, and I copied a bunch of files and
mm-hmm.
stuff. And by this time, he introduced himself. He's the owner of a black newspaper in Dallas, Texas, and his name was Theodore Roosevelt Lee. And I'll never forget that name as
mm-hmm.
long as I live. So I told Mr. Lee, I says, "Okay, here, don't take anything away from Dory Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Now you go back and what you've got and point the true picture of Dory Miller. I mean, what happened?"
Mm-hmm.
His comment was that burned the place down.
Right.
And I said, "Well, now where do we go?" But in the meantime now, I'm off getting records about what happened on the West Virginia. Of time and the officers got back to the ship and this and this and this happened. And by the time that you get around, if he did man the guns and did knock a plane down, can't see more than 4 feet due to smoke and fire, after they got the word to abandon ship, where are the planes that he knocked down? I'm not saying he didn't man a gun, but if he shot any planes down, where'd they land?
Right. And there are many accounts, and as I shared with you, there's a great danger, and I applaud you, and I'm really thankful that there are people like you looking for the truth rather than looking for the massage side of life that we want to hear what we want to hear. There are questions. 6 planes, some say he shot down, but the real accounts that some other people, there's a one article straight from the records, official records, he was, because of his height and strength, and he was there assisting people that were injured and pulling them out. So how could he be shooting down 6 planes and or whatever, and then, you know.
Well, Carol, the first story was a Detroit newspaper
mm-hmm.
where he shot down one plane.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was 2 in the next article.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was 3, and this thing kept going.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah. And
who
I
knows who hit what?
As an African American, when I see that and I see the absence of, and I must say this, and this is independent of you being participating in this show or anything, but I've gone away with a really sad feeling toward the national parks. Nothing to do with you or anything, and that is, as I've learned now, and I was sitting there reading your documents and all the work you've done about the Westlock disaster, I try not to show that, but I was a bit incensed because it is the National Parks who has an office there at Pearl Harbor. They should have had something and should do something from this day forward to acknowledge and to bring out that incident. It's Pearl Harbor, not just the day that it was attacked. But we found nothing, can find not even a mere mention of it. So, again, I thank you, but I was really frustrated once I'm looking at your documents and thinking to myself, if Ray Emery can go through this using his own monies and his own time, why didn't the National Park have something? Why?
Carol.
So I offer that for me. Those of you listening, I'm not trying to recruit Ray here to become an advocate or a rabble-rouser. It's just that these are my observations.
Carol, they don't know the Pearl Harbor story.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. I spent 2 or 3 years out there listening to this. When I first got there, they didn't even have a list of casualties. They never even had a list of the ships that were in the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
They got a letter from a lady that going around, there was 17 sets of brothers and a father and son aboard the ship. So they received a letter who the father and son was. Nobody knew. So instead of doing some checking, about a week later, I says, they're not doing anything about it. So I took an elderly casualty and a young casualty with the last name,
mm-hmm.
says, this must be the father and son. So I wrote to St. Louis and asked them if they could confirm if this was a father and son. I got it back. Sure enough, here's the father, here's the son. So I took the information out to Memorial, Arizona Memorial. I says, I'd like to answer the lady's letter. Where's the letters you got? Want to know who the father and son was. They couldn't even find it.
Mm-hmm.
I was made the front page of the Wall Street Journal over the way that place was operated. Back shortly.
I saw the article.
Yeah. And I says, before I left out there, I beat my hand on the desk so hard. If you can't find the truth here, where are you going to find it?
Mm-hmm.
I defy anybody out there that can tell you what ships were in the harbor that day.
Right. And along with that, I look at the Dory Mill. That's why I raise it, soliciting from you, to demonstrate that the National Parks is willing to present this story in such a fashion, but yet never uttering a word of what had transpired in 1944. Or not even a simple plaque. Nothing. So I question the whole process over there. Is it now just a money-making machine? It's one of those attractions that it's a tourist attraction. But does it really honor our soldiers? Does it really honor the people that have served, both civilians and all? And why have we failed? Why does it take a Ray Emery to come along and piece these things together when they are experts in preserving, gathering, and assembling this information to tell the story historically? Why? And JPAC.
Carol, when I first went out there, first of all, I was reluctant to go.
Mm-hmm.
Fred Kukona was the one that talked me into coming because I was hearing stories out there that if I came out, I was going to be a problem. And so Fred Kukona says, that's my problem, the stories that they were telling. So I went out there, and like I showed you, I made the front page of the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way that place operates. That
the National Parks Pearl Harbor office, yeah. My opinion wasn't very high. And then again, not to take away from what the Navy has done, because whatever the Navy didn't do, they're sure making it up in the last 3 years. If anybody's complaining, they shouldn't be directing it at the Navy, because they have made great, grand steps. And there's a Figueroa, an officer, who has just really worked at this hard and helping bring this to light. And so I don't want to detract from those people and their goodness of what has been done.
Carol, how I really got involved in this, I came out to Honolulu for the 25th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. And there was, even the Pearl Harbor survivors, there was no drawing that's showing where ships were or the ships were in it. And on that tour, the Seattle chapter of the Pearl Harbor Survivor Association put on a pitch to have the convention in 68, mm-hmm. up in Seattle. So when we got home, we looked at each other and said, okay, well, since we got it now, what do we do with it? So I was sitting down there on there, and I said, well, somebody ought to come up with a drawing, mm-hmm. at least showing where the ships were in Pearl Harbor. So it happened to be that I got a geodetic survey drawing, and I got a copy of the ship's logs, and start putting the ships where they were in the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I made end up making a model of it. I ought to go on a bed sheet or something big so you can see it. Well, I ended up making a model of Pearl Harbor. It's a scale. It's 8 feet wide and 12 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
All a scale. So that's how I got into this thing to start with, was I got copies of the ship's logs, and they couldn't argue with me where the ships were because that's where the logs were saying.
But what we didn't share with the listeners is that you were, by trade, an architect.
Well, I graduated in architecture, but never, ever really used it.
But I offered that so that when you say you did made
a model,
yeah. it wouldn't be the Carol Cox type of model. This is a little more.
This, in some ways, this has been a wonderful ride through life.
Oh, yeah.
I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Moments are frustrating, but boy, you overcome that and you just keep going.
I had a young ensign by the name of Bergan. I said, can't use the word can't one day in front of him. He said, young man, you come over here. I want to talk to you. He said, you use that word can't. That word's not even in the dictionary. You may not be able to do it one way, but we can do it another.
You can do it another way.
Yeah. So when you say something can't be done, well, yeah, it can.
Well, if there's any callers out there, my guest is Mr. Ray Emery, and he is a former sailor served at Pearl Harbor on the day of 1941, December 7th. But if you have any questions or comments you'd like to call in the next 10 minutes, feel free, 524-1080, 524-1080, and if you have a question or comment you'd like to offer. But where do we go from here? Are you going to continue this effort, or what's on your agenda now?
I'm just waiting to start digging. I'll be there when they start digging.
Yeah, over here at Ponch Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
What's that going to take? How is that going to be done? Today's article, I didn't read the entire. Yeah, you got this right here. Senators ask Pentagon to help identify, bring home remains of sailors killed at Pearl Harbor. This is a Washington bipartisan group of 15 United States senators, led by U.S. Senators Chris Murphy of a Democrat, Connecticut, and Kelly Ayotte, a Republican of New Hampshire, are seeking the assistance of the Department of Defense in an effort to have the bodies of 21 men who lost their lives during the attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941 exhumed so that they can either be brought home for burial in their community or be buried in a marked grave in Hawaii. So that's what's on the agenda now.
Keep reading.
And all 21 men were killed along with 408 other sailors when the USS Oklahoma was torpedoed during the attack on Pearl Harbor, end quote. The senators wrote, end quote, in 1943, when the Oklahoma was salvaged and raised, the remains of the sailors classified as, quote, unknown, were buried in the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific in Hawaii. For nearly 70 years, the family members of these men never knew the final resting place of their loved ones. We respectfully ask that the Department of Defense grant the JPAC, Central Identification Laboratory's request to exhume the five, quote, unknown, end quote, caskets and identify the remains. The brave men who died protecting our great nation at Pearl Harbor deserve a final resting place of their families' choosing, end quote. Honorable Chuck Hagel, full text of the letter of Chuck Hagel that was sent to him. So, are we going to see any movement, or has there been any response? And the senators are Chris Murphy, United States Senator, Kelly Ayotte, Jerry Moran, Richard Blumenthal, Ron Johnson, Michael Bennett, Mark Udall, Saxby Chambliss, Benjamin Cardin, Rob Portman, Charles Schumer, Mark Kirk, Lisa Murkowski, Thad Cochran, Gene Shaheen. And there's, let's see here. Okay, down at, we're right on the, all 21 men were killed along with 408 others. In 2003, using military records and personnel files, a historian for the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association named Ray Emery ascertained the identities of 27 men killed on the Oklahoma previously listed as, quote, unknown. After Mr. Emery's research was shared with the Department of Defense, scientists and Central Identification Laboratory of the Joint POWMIA Accounting Command, JPAC, exhumed the coffin from grave P1002 at the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific. Between 2003 and 2008, with the help of Mr. Emery's research and the families of five men buried at P1002, JPAC correctly identified all five men in the coffin: Lawrence A. Box Rucker, Eldon P. Wyman, Irvin A.R. Thompson, Charles Swanson, and Gerald Lehman. And their remains were returned to their prospective families for burial. Once Mr. Emery's research was validated by the correct identification of the men buried in P1002, he enlisted the help of Bob Valley from the USS Oklahoma Family Inc. to track down the next of kin for the remaining 22 men. So, and they were able to find contact information for the 21 of the 22 men. Great work. So we're waiting now for that, to the appropriations.
They got money.
So they're just not doing it.
Well, first of all, the Secretary of the Navy was involved. He objected to digging them up. But the Army is in charge of the unknown. So that letter to the Secretary of Defense was written, what, 2 months ago? I forget the date on it.
Mm-hmm.
But he has since sent that letter down to one of his subordinates to do something. So anyway, till that comes out, to this joker or whatever, whoever he is.
Mm-hmm. Well, folks, if you want to, you veterans out there,
if you'll notice, not one senator, Congress from this state,
right?
Where are they?
They're busy running for office. I don't see Hirano's name on here.
You don't see any of them.
I don't see Schatz's name on here, and I don't see Tulsi Gabbard's name. I mean, it's just, she's not a senator. But for those of you out there that would like to participate and do something or get this thing moving, here's an address. The Honorable Chuck Hagel, Secretary of Defense, 1000 Defense Pentagon, Washington, D.C., 20301-1300. Again, the Honorable Chuck Hagel, Secretary of Defense, 1000 Defense Pentagon, Washington, D.C., 20301-1300. And if you'd be so kind or interested, write him a letter and ask him to go ahead and do what is necessary to help facilitate this and get it done. The information is already there. The money, and I guess it's just a snag that the Navy says don't move them and the Army says move them, or what? What's the deal?
Yeah, because SILHI has a mandate to get so many people identified per year or get out of business. Well, yeah. Here you got them laying in their front yard here. They're not out in the Tules down in New Guinea or someplace.
Right.
They're right here. And the paper, if little dumb kid like me can figure out where these people are buried by the paper trail, they got more trails than I have. That's for sure. More records.
And then more resources and more money.
Yeah.
Because you're not a nonprofit or anything. You're spending out of your pocket.
Yeah.
Not that it matters, but...
Yeah, I've
but
made trips to the mainland from these burials. And
right.
People ask me if I'd come, and I've went. Mm-hmm. Naturally, the government's not paying my way.
But before we close, there's also a cadre of men and women that died abroad in the Philippines and all that. What about those people that are insured?
Same way. Same way as a bunch more.
So if they're not known here, what we see here in the behavior, then I guess...
Let's you and I get an airplane ticket and go to Manila for a couple of weeks.
I'm giving when you mentioned it the other day, I'm giving serious thought about seeing if what I can do to help, because I know there were a lot of men from my hometown that served in the Philippines that didn't return. My father and then an uncle of ours was also there. In fact, went AWOL and stayed for a while. He didn't want to leave the Philippines. But many of them are there. And how many are entombed out there in turn?
I don't know. Probably about 30 or 40,000.
And we just don't know what the status is.
Same way as the punch bowl.
Okay. Well, anyway, I appreciate you joining us. And, folks, anything you can do, the rights, Senator Hirano and anyone else, and it's only 21 left to in this batch that needs to be not identified, just taken
in. It was known as the Oklahoma 27.
Okay.
When I first got into it, I noticed that one of the guy's name was not on the on an Oklahoma list, a casualty list.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent away for his personnel of siege file, a guy named Wyman. And in his personnel of siege file said that he had been identified, not approved, because the pathologist didn't sign off on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I took that list of the 27, 26 beside him, backtracked, and finally figured out where these people were buried. They had 5 in one grave, 11 in another, 10 in another, and one that he's buried with 6 others over here. So the Oklahoma group says, hey, if we got the 5 right, why can't we dig up the rest of the 27, which would be 22?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that was...
Well, we'll be talking about more of it on the show here and see, and keep us posted. I'll be definitely checking with you to see how this is advanced. You anticipate any time soon they'll respond to this?
I have no idea. They're pretty slow sometimes.
Yeah.
They may have responded, and I don't even know about it. I don't know.
Okay. Well, Ray, thank you for joining me, and we'll do this. And by the way, we know that Halava was a place, right? And Nuuanu. Where else, right quick? And then I'm going to see if this phone call is...
Over to, up at Schofield Barracks, somewhere we're buried, and then over Kaneohe.
Okay. Caller, good morning. Real quick, you have a comment or question?
Hi, this is almost Denise again, looking at a biplane with a giant American flag behind it flying across the sky. My comment is about, I know about JTRAC, and my hope is that if any trips are made to Manila, that no one tries to scam JTRAC like in other places with cow bones and such being said to be... The remains of Americans.
Yeah, they've had some inaccurate...
ugly stories, I've heard. Truly horrible.
Okay.
People do.
All righty. Well, thank you, Denise.
Thank you.
Aloha. Any more you got to say before we close?
No.
All righty.
Wait to see you maybe one of these days again soon.
Well, we'll be soon in the coming weeks. We will be talking again, and hope that all of you have enjoyed this and have a good Memorial Day. And... I really want to thank Mr. Ray Emery, and we didn't even touch on what the work this gentleman is doing. So we'll definitely hold him in high regards and look forward to talking with him again. And we'll see you next week. And, hey, I'm doing okay. And someone says, well, how could you get hit like that, you know, the attack on me? And I just say, sometimes in this business you have to use your head, folks. And that's just the way it is. So we'll get to the bottom of it. Don't fret. Take care, Aloha.
lovely day. Love came planning to stay. Green dolphin streets supply the setting. The setting for nights beyond forgetting.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.